The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
We now come to a new lens. The lens that I want to discuss is called Tiferet, as well as I would like to talk to you a little bit about Chesed and Gevura. Until now, what we have been exploring, these lower Sefirot other than the Malchus, which is the receptacle, is having an understanding of, let's call it, the energy of the universe. Right? The energy of the universe. We begin to become sensitive to life force. We begin to sense a presence in the world, everywhere, at all times. As we go higher, so to speak, through the lenses of Netzach Hod and Yesod, we see the God of nature, we see the God of history. Now, as we go even higher, I don't even really want to use the word higher on this diagram, but the truth is it's not a question of higher or lower. It's different glasses, different perspectives, whereby the lower is, so to speak, God is revealed
through nature,
God is revealed through history. Now we're talking a little bit more about the God who is revealed, the God of morality, the God of ethics. Kant once said that what is absolutely astonishing is the starry heavens and the moral conscience within. Okay? And so we see Hashem, depending on whether we open up the eyes of our soul, we see Hashem through nature, through history. Nature speaks the wonders of God, the glory of God, the power. All that is manifest through nature if a person opens their eyes to see that. However, the God of ethics, we also see God in great acts. We also see God in great heroic acts, acts of love, kindness, acts of justice, acts of sacrifice, acts of truth. And there's something more then. I mean, when you see an old person on the street, clearly hard pressed for money, and you go over to that person and you give them a dollar, well, what did you just do? What did you just do? I mean, that moment you feel like you did something of eternal value. You feel like you did something that's really meaningful. You feel like you did something really significant. Another person, very cynical, could say, that's so stupid. Why did you give your money away? It's a stranger. You don't know him. All you did is you stuck your hand in your pocket, took out a buck, and handed it to this complete stranger. Right? What did you do? You say, I just did an act of kindness. I just embodied an eternal value. I just expressed a true divine quality in this world. And your friend says, no, you just stuck your hand in your pocket, took out a buck, handed it to some other person who you have no connection with at all. So with your physical eyes, all you see is the motor skill of taking money and transferring it to Mr. X. But with your eyes of spirit, with your eyes of soul, when you put on, so to speak, the lenses of kindness, and you see through the lens of kindness, all of a sudden you see that something of great significance just happened. Something very true just happened. Of great quality just happens, called kindness. All right? So, through justice, kindness, and truth, we are able to see Hashem through these attributes. The more we ourselves adopt activities of kindness, justice, and truth, the more we embody, so to speak, the spirit of Hashem in this world. All right? So there is seeing God, encountering Hashem through nature and history. And when we encounter Hashem through nature and history, we begin to understand that God is, so to speak, the Lord of hosts. All of history and all of nature are, so to speak, legions, which are fulfilling the command, maneuvers, strategically expressing the will of a greater reality. And that's through the looking glass of Netzach and Hod. But now, we're going to look through the eyeglass of kindness. Seeing kindness. Appreciating how real kindness is. Seeing justice. Something real is happening over here. Okay? Seeing truth. And experiencing truth. Okay. So let me just try and explain a little bit of what is kindness. What is Gevura, which is often associated with justice, and what is Tiferet, what is truth. So first of all, there are three ways of behaving. And these three ways, so to speak, channel the life force, the divine life force into the world, which is what we have been offered the possibility to do. Kindness is when I do something for you that I don't have to do. Okay? That's what it means to be kind. I don't have to do this. All right? So why did I do it? Well, because I want to do it. I don't owe you anything. It's not as if you deserve this. All right? That's kindness. Doing something for someone else that you are not obliged to do to them because you owe them something. Okay? So let's say you hit somebody's car and you cause a significant dent. And now you pay them for those damages. Is that kindness? No, that's not kindness, right? You owe them that money because you caused the damage, right? And therefore, they deserve to be paid. So justice is when I do something for you that you deserve by rights. From the standpoint of justice, you deserve this, right? I owe you this. That's justice. Kindness is, I do an act of kindness. I invite you to my home for Shabbat. I don't have to invite you over for Shabbat. I don't owe you anything. Okay? So, kindness is when I do something for you that you don't have to do. Right? Justice is when I do something for you that I do have to do. Okay? Justice is you get what you deserve. That's justice. And that is a true quality in the world, according to Judaism. One of the qualities of reality is justice. One of the qualities of Hashem is justice. Through justice, the light of God, so to speak, comes in the world. And justice is, you get what you deserve. Okay? And that's very empowering to get what you deserve. Right? Very often people would like to get what they deserve because they get that feeling like, I earned it, it's mine. I don't know, have you ever had that experience where you just didn't want a freebie? You really wanted the satisfying experience that you worked at it, you built towards it, and it's yours. Because you put that work in and you got what you deserve. That's justice, getting what you deserve. Kindness is not getting what you deserve, right? It has really nothing to do with what you do deserve, okay? Now compassion, which is connected to Tiferet, kindness is chesed, gvur is justice, Tiferet is compassion. Compassion is when I give you something even though you don't deserve it. Okay? Kindness is I give you something and it's not like you don't deserve it, but it's not like you deserve it either. I mean, there's no issue over here. But compassion is when I give you something in spite of the fact that you really don't deserve that to get it. In fact, you deserve not to get it and yet I still give it to you. Do you understand the difference between kindness, justice, and compassion? Okay? So, compassion would be that, let's think of something that, let's say, I dent your car, and therefore from the standpoint of justice, I should pay you, right? You say, you know what? Forget it. It's okay. Right? That's really compassion. Because I really don't deserve that you should say okay. Okay? So really, compassion is the unification of justice and kindness. Okay? There's an understanding of justice. We're not pretending we don't see what's going on. Right? We know you don't deserve it. In fact, you deserve not to have this. From the standpoint of justice, you really shouldn't have this. But from the standpoint of kindness, right? We throw a little kindness into the justice, we mix it together, right? And we come out with compassion, which means you get something you don't deserve. Now, this is a very important idea. Judaism tells us that God does not give up, so to speak. Lo vatranhu. God doesn't say, it's okay, it doesn't matter. Okay? Forget it. It doesn't matter. Right? That is not the highest form. Judaism does not believe that God is a vatran. Actually, what it means is, sometimes something happens in your life, and it's on credit. We know that you don't have the cash right now. Okay, you can pay later. In other words, compassion doesn't say, well, we'll just forget about your debt, and just doesn't really matter. Right? That's not the point. No, you have a debt, and from the standpoint of your debt, you really can't come in here and buy anything because you don't have the money. Right? But we're ready to give you a loan. We're ready to put it on credit card and we'll pay over time. So it's an important understanding in Judaism that Judaism has tremendous respect for justice and that a person should get what they deserve. But sometimes justice is, so to speak, balanced out with kindness. Balanced out with kindness. And therefore we say, although you don't deserve it, what we're going to do is we're going to give it to you, and you'll pay for it slowly. You'll accrue your merit over time. Okay. But it's much deeper than this. All right? Now what I'd like to do is focus more specifically on what Tiferet is. Because when you understand Tiferet, you have a better understanding of all the other, so to speak, looking glasses, the other qualities that make up life. So Tiferet is referred to as a clear lens. All the other lenses are somewhat like a colored lens. And remember, I said, according to the Kabbalah, the prophets achieved prophecy through the lens, through achieving consciousness of Netzach and Hod, grandeur and power, as God is manifest through nature, through history, through providence. And it was through that incredible awareness and the wonder and the thankfulness and the appreciation that that consciousness gave them, that's what built their vessels and opened the channels for them to be receptive for prophetic wisdom. However, Moses did not prophesy through those lenses, which are considered to be stain-colored lenses, but rather Moses saw God, so to speak, saw reality, so to speak, through the lens called Tiferet. So Tiferet is a clear lens. Okay? Tiferet is translated as beauty, and we'll talk about that in a second. But Tiferet is associated, it's not translated as, but it's associated with the qualities of truth, the quality of compassion. It's referred to as Zerampin, which means the small face. So it's somehow associated with somewhat, at least a limited face-to-face encounter with God. And the experience that one is left with when they have Tiferet, when they are able to achieve this level of consciousness whereby they see reality through this level of consciousness, they are inspired with a sense of awesomeness. Remember, we've been talking about how certain experiences leave you with gratefulness and thankfulness, wonder, surprise. Well, the emotion that one feels when they have this Tiferet awareness The emotion or the experience that inspires is awesomeness. It's just absolutely awesome. Okay? So now, every lens through which we view reality gives us a new name with which we can, so to speak, call reality. Right? So we pointed out that when we are conscious of Malchus, of kingdom, we become very conscious of God, we become very conscious of Hashem as a master, the great master, the boss, so to speak. When we see reality through the lenses of Yesod, foundation, then we see life, we see life force, and we see God as El Chai, the God of life. Okay? Then we saw how when we look through the lenses of Netzach and Hod, grandeur and power as is manifest in nature and history, we begin to see reality as the God or the Lord of hosts, the commander, the major, that commands all these legions, that power that commands all these legions. But now when we look at reality through the eyes, through the looking glass of Tiferet, what name do we now have? We have the name, the Yud, the He, the Vav, the He. Okay? The Yud, the He, the Vav, the He, which I'm not going to write on the board because then I can't rub it off. Right? So I'm just going to put a Kuf instead of a He. That's the name that's associated with Tiferet. That's when I get to know God as that name. Now, it's important to understand, you know, names really mean something. They mean something. And so far, what we're really doing here is we're discovering all these different names. And I think I want to share with you, it's very strange, Judaism is this religion that believed in one God. So why is it the religion that believed in one God has all these names for the one God? And there were those critics who said, no, clearly Judaism really isn't monotheistic because it has all these different names of God. It must be different gods. No, we say there's only one Hashem, but there are many names for this one Hashem. The question is, what is the meaning of all these names? Okay? Well, I think I shared with you before, you know, there are different names. Each name opens up a new gate of encounter. For instance, imagine two people are set up on a blind date, right? Blind date. He's Mr. Jones, she's Miss Smith. You know, nice to meet you, Miss Smith. Nice to meet you, Mr. Jones. He, of course, immediately says, oh, please don't call me Mr. Jones. You can call me Robert. She says, well, that's really terrific, Robert. Thank you very much. You can call me Elizabeth. Something happened, right? A whole new level of encounter, right? Before it's Mr. Jones, Miss Smith. But once you're able to say Elizabeth, there's a much deeper connection, right? New doors to their essences opened up. And you get closer. Okay. Well, it was a terrific evening. And you say, you know, Elizabeth, I really enjoyed it. Do you think we could get together again? She says, terrific, Robert. I would love to do that. Well, the next night you're going out, things are opening up really fast. He turns to Elizabeth, he says, you know what, Elizabeth, please, my closer friends call me Rob. She says, Rob, a revelation, right? This is no longer Mr. Jones, this is no longer Robert, this is Rob. Wow, it's a whole new level. Whole new level of meeting, right? She says, well, quite frankly, Rob, my closer friends, who really knows me, call me Liz. Whoa. From Elizabeth to Liz, a whole new level of revelation, right? Much more is coming through. Much deeper. Well, this is really terrific. Well, they're going out a couple more dates, and it is getting so deep, he turns to her, and he says, you know, Liz, please, please, my closest, closest, my mom calls me Bobby. Whoa! Mr. Jones turns into Robert, turns into Rob, turns into Bobby. Right? She says, well, I just want you to know that my closest friends call me Lily. Lily? Ah, Lily, from Miss Smith to Elizabeth to Liz to Lily. Whoa. Do you understand the revelation? But you see, something happens. Like when he calls her Lily, nobody else can call her Lily like he calls her Lily. And when she says Bobby, gates are opening up in their relationship. They make a connection like nobody else can. But unfortunately, you know, these things do happen. They get into a bit of a little, let's say, a disagreement. And she says something that kind of puts Bobby off. Bobby turns to Lily, says, Lily, really, I'm really surprised that you think that way. She turns to Bobby. She says, well, Rob, maybe you just don't understand me. He turns to Lily. He says, Liz, I mean, I think you should think about what you're really communicating when you say that. She then turns to Rob and she says, well, Robert, I think you're just being a bit, just slightly a bit difficult. He says, Elizabeth, maybe this is just happening too fast. And she says, well, nice meeting you, Mr. Smith, or Mr. Jones. And he says, goodbye, Miss Smith. You see, names are connections, you know? And so too, all these different names in the Bible for Hashem actually are opening up totally different doors in the relationship. And a person could be having a discussion with another person and say, you know, JB, I really think that we need to be putting much more money into the promotion department. He says, well, I'm sorry, I just don't accept that, and I really don't feel that that's important. He turns to the boss, he says, but Dad, I mean, you know, sister's in the department, and we really... Oh, okay, fine, son. You see, there's certain different kinds of relationships which names really enable us to plug into. So all these different names, these lenses, gives a whole new encounter with Hashem, gives us a whole new name that we're able to call. And with that name, we're able to open up those gates of connection. That's what we're told in our Torah. But it's more than just names. You know, you wouldn't appreciate some stranger saying, hey, Lily, you really don't deserve, you have absolutely no right to call me that. We're not at that place, right, where you should be speaking to me in that way, because that relationship where you're at and your level of consciousness and behavior's at, you can't call me by that name. So now, this name that I'm introducing, and the reason why I've gone into this whole long song and dance about names, is because this is the most serious name. Because the name, the Yud, the He, the Vav, the He, is considered to be the very name. This name, this attribute, this quality, and you'll soon see it's not so much a quality, is really the center that holds it all together. This quality, the Tiferet, is referred to as, so to speak, the tree. All the other qualities are actually branches, right? But it's all being connected through that, all right? And so this quality, Tiferet, is considered to be like the tree, and all the other qualities and all the other names are considered to be branches. This Sefirah Tiferet is considered to be like the body, so to speak. Whereas all the other Sefirot, all the other attributes are like clothing, like garments. But what do I mean by that? What does the Kabbalah mean by that? This name, the Yud, the He, the Vav, the He, is referred to as Shem Ha'etzem, the very name. The essential name, the essence. In other words, Have you ever been on a bus and you're sitting beside a complete stranger and you get into this whole discussion, right? You get in this whole discussion and you find out that they're a father and you find out that they're a boss. They have a company. You find out that they love to play sports. Love to play sports, and so they're an athlete. And you're having this terrific conversation. You're getting to know this person more and more and more and more. And then you realize after 2.5 hours of this discussion, you don't even know their name. And now you're feeling really uncomfortable, like, do I have the right? Do I have the right not to? I mean, do I have the right to ask them for their name? Have you ever had that experience? And now it's really strange. Like, I know so much about them. I know they're a father. I know they're a son. I know they're an athlete. I know they're a boss. But I don't know their name. And so now comes that moment of truth where I finally said, well, so what's your name? And they go, there's a little bit of a tension, like, You see, that's Shema Etzem. That's the very name. In other words, you call me Rabbi. My mother calls me son. My children call me father. But that's not my name. Right? Those are roles I play. Those are, so to speak, professional titles, let's put it. Official titles. But who has the right to call me David? Right? Who has the right to call me David? So the name Yud Hey Vav Hey is like David, right? Elohim is more like Lord. Adonai is Master, right? But who has the right to say this particular name? Because when I give you my name, rather my title, it means that you and I are going to have a face-to-face, direct encounter. Right? Now it's important to understand that David is hidden behind Rabbi. And David is hidden, right? And comes shining through, but still hidden. You still get a glimpse of David behind Rabbi. You get a glimpse of David behind son, you know? You get a glimpse behind David as boss. But nonetheless, who has the right to call me David? It's a whole different level that you don't allow everybody to have unless they're ready, unless you're ready. So the name Yud, the Hey, the Vav, the Hey is the name. So much so that we're only allowed to see it but not say it. Because when we see that name, what do we actually say? Adonai. Right? We don't pronounce that name. Right? Now, maybe you've had the experience where you have somebody knock on your door and say, we're from the Jehovah's Witnesses. We're collecting money for Jehovah's Witnesses. You know what the Jehovah's Witnesses are? These are a group of people who are trying to pronounce this name as it's written. For whatever reason, they think a Yud is pronounced as a J. So they say, instead of Yud, they say Jod. Right? They say Jod. So what are they actually trying to say? They're actually trying to pronounce that name. And our tradition says that you're not allowed to pronounce that name. You're only allowed to see it. But you say something else. You're able to get a glimpse of the Yud, the Hey, the Vav, the Hey, as it's kind of peering through the Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud. You have a relationship with Hashem as Master, boss, king. But certainly behind the king is a very real personal essence. And so through the king you get an encounter with Jerry, right? Jerry was the king, right? But it's still filtered through and still not a completely direct encounter, a face-to-face encounter. And so, you might notice in a Siddur that there's a name of God which are two Yuds. Have you ever seen that? Two Yuds put together? There's no such name. You will not find that name anywhere in the Torah or in the prophets. There's no such name. It's only in a Sidur. It's only in a printed prayer book. What do you see in a printed prayer book? You see these two yuds. What's it actually telling you? It's telling you to see the essence peering between or through the lattice of the name Master. Why? Because imagine my fingers here is the name Aleph, Dalid, Nun, Yud, Master. Now, if I were to take the name, the Yud, the He, the Vav, the He, on these fingers, and I integrated them, right? What name would you see? Right? Actually, go like this. It's this way. You would see a word that starts with a Yud and ends with the Yud. It would be Yud, Aleph, He, Dalid, Vav, Nun, right? Yud. You got it, something like that. Do you follow this? In other words, what it's suggesting is have the insight to see the essence peering through the title. Yes, when I look at nature, I get a sense of a master. When I look at history, I get a sense of a maestro, of a commander, a power which is directing the choreography of life. But those are titles. To have that face-to-face encounter, right? That's not so simple. Not everybody is deserving of that. More important, not everybody's ready for that. Now, Moses was ready for that. Moses was this unique human being, according to our teachings, who had the ability to have that face-to-face encounter with Hashem. Seeing reality through the clear lenses of Tiferet. And therefore, it says in the Torah, in Parshas Vayera, Hashem says to Moses, I appeared to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the name El Shaddai, which is connected to Yesod. However, my name, Yud, He, Vav, He, was not made known to them. What does that mean? It means that that level of face-to-face encounter with Hashem was not available to them. However, Moses, it says in the Torah, Moses, it says in Shemot chapter 24, says, and Moses by himself approached Yud He Vav He. But nobody else did. He was able to go inside and have that relationship. And so too, it says in Deuteronomy chapter 33, that
there was never a prophet, nor will there ever be a prophet in Israel like Moses, who knew Yud He Vav He face to face. Face to face. And that was what was unique about his prophecy. In other words, if a person could reach this level, and Torah is telling us that this is a very hard level to reach, at best we can at least taste that name, Yud He Vav He, as it's hiding. At best you can taste a little sense of David behind the rabbi, David behind the boss. Right? And that's what we try to do. So all the other names are considered to be garments to this name, right? Sometimes I wear the rabbinical garb. Sometimes I wear the employer garb. Sometimes I wear the athletic garb. And I'm completely in these garbs. But I continue to be the undivided David, right? And some people can see through the garb, right? But still there's a garb. Now you have to understand, the way the Kabbalah describes this is like a king. When the king's in public, he has his royal garb, royal garments. When he gets inside the house, back into his palace, well, then he's able to loosen his tie, undo his button. In other words, around those of his household, there's a whole level of of relationship, a certain amount of garments that he can let go of. He can strip himself of. It's okay. They don't need that garb. But the Kabbalah says that only with your husband or your wife do you stand completely face to face without any garments. And that was the level that Moses reached in his relation to Hashem. And therefore the relation between Moses and Hashem has been described as the relation between a husband and a wife. Husband and wife. Nobody in the world is going to make that connection like your husband or wife. Nobody. I mean, I have friends that call me David. But nobody calls me David like my wife. Nobody opens that kind of door. Nobody gets that level of intimacy. Because that's a special kind of relationship that one must be ready for. One's behavior, ethical sensitivities must be appropriate for. And therefore, in a certain sense, this level we're able to achieve with great work of encountering Hashem with that kind of intimacy, that kind of directness, right? Everything else, all the other names are garbs, but this name is the name. And now the question is, are you able to get a sense of that name behind the garbs? And so really, what is this name connected to? It's connected to Tiferet. Why? What is Tiferet? Tiferet literally means beauty. Tiferet literally means beauty. What is beauty? What is a person who is really beautiful? So the reason why this attribute is referred to as beauty is because everything he or she wears is befitting them. They're so beautiful. No matter what they wear, they're beautiful. So too over here, all the other names, all the other attributes, or so to speak, the garments to this. This is connected to the word you. The word you. In other words, when we make a bracha, when we make a blessing, we say, Baruch Atah Hashem. Blessed are you, God. Now, this is pretty amazing. Who are you to say you?
Right.
To say you. I mean, the truth is that according to Jewish law, you're actually not even supposed to say you to a rabbi. You're supposed to say, what does the rabbi think? You know? What does the rabbi think? You're not allowed to speak to a king. Well, what do you think? Who are you to say you to a king? That's very intimate. That's very direct. That's very personal. You? You? And so even when you speak to the king, you say, what does the highness think? What does his highness want? What does his majesty desire? But you don't say, what do you want? You? You. Well, Judaism says that there's a level of experience, or to be more specific, a level of encounter, where a person is actually able to say, you, to Hashem. And what does you mean? How do you describe? What is the meaning of you? Nobody can ever talk about you. If I'm talking about you, right, then I'm saying he or she, right? I can't talk about you. I can only speak to you. All the other attributes is a level of relationship where I'm able to talk about God. But this attribute is so direct. I'm able to talk to God. And therefore, this attribute isn't really so much considered an attribute. Right? Because the attributes are garments. But Tiferet is a lens whereby I encounter realness. And that's what I think would be the best word here. Because Tiferet is connected to truth. But what is truth? Being true. Truth is authentic, genuine, real. Okay? So, this is a level of realness. Encountering realness. Now, until now we've been encountering order, organism, organization. That's a quality to the world, to history. We then began to see that that's only a vessel. And if we go deeper, we begin to see life, aliveness, blessing, goodness, fullness. This is a quality I'm able to see with my eyes of soul. I then went to an even higher level, or a deeper level. I put on the glasses of Netzach and Hod, and I began to see power, grandeur. And these are qualities. How do you see grandeur? Right? Remember we talked about it. A person can be at the Grand Canyon, one looks at the Grand Canyon, one sees it. One is absolutely overwhelmed. One says, oh, gee, I wonder how deep this is. I'll throw a Coke can into it. Whole different level, right? Looking at it is with the eyes. Seeing is with your soul. When you see the Grand Canyon, you see grandeur. You see awesomeness. And you're in a state of wonder and surprise. But now the truth is that all these qualities, you see kindness when a person reaches out to you. You see justice when the decree has come down and you see serious consequences to your behavior. And you know it's real, you know it's important. But realness is a whole other level. It's a whole other level. It's the essence that all of this are really garments to. Realness. Seeing realness, you know, there's a book called Reality Therapy. Quite frankly, I never read the book, but I love the title. People lose touch with seeing realness. You know? And not to be too cynical, but you know, sometimes someone's breaking up with their boyfriend or girlfriend, and they've somehow lost the quality of this being real. You know, they almost feel like this is a film. We're ending this show. The credits are going to go down over the horizon. This feeling of like realness. I don't know if you have ever been to these cinespheres where they give you this experience, you know, within 20 minutes for only $3. You're on a roller coaster. Now you're under the sea. Now you're jumping out of an airplane. Now you're climbing to the top of Mount Everest. All that for $3 in 20 minutes. There's only one thing wrong. Realness. And the truth is that film might give you a sense of grandeur. You know, you say, wow. But it's only a garment. And there's nothing real behind that film. It's only a metaphor for real. For that which is real. And we lose touch, and a lot of people are satisfied with that. Remember, I mentioned to you, if you've ever been with someone who's looking at this incredible scene and they say, wow, this is so beautiful, it reminds me of a postcard. This reminds you of a postcard? People lose touch with realness. Realness. And this, I believe, is one of the reasons why people subject themselves to all kinds of sensationalism. See, sensationalism has to do, in my opinion, with people who have lost their sensations. And therefore they need continual, more and more influx of sensationalism so that they can get a sense of realness. Realness. It's like shock treatment. Like life is real. I remember when I was a teenager, I was very involved with rock and roll. I was in a band, I used to go to a lot of concerts. So I remember there was this guy, I don't know if he's still playing. He might be. A guy named Alice Cooper. And Alice is a stickle of a meshuggah, you know? Bit of a strange fellow. And Alice's concerts, they weren't concerts. They were a circus, basically. Because Alice would get on stage, and he would first sing a song with a live cobra, you know, around his body, you know. And then he takes out of his garment a baby doll. And then he takes out of his other pocket a hatchet. And he begins to hatchet into pieces this little baby doll. And thousands of people who've paid like $20 for these seats are just, wow, you know. And he starts throwing little pieces of baby doll. You know, and people are grabbing for this little piece of baby doll.
In fact, I have mine right here.
And then he sings a song with a live chicken. They start throwing around, spinning around his head. And it's not Yom Kippur either, right? Then he takes a watermelon and jumps on this watermelon and starts kicking it at the audience. And again, realize you've just paid $20 to have watermelon in your face. And you're just, ah, wow. And then the final scene is his band hangs him on stage, which truly he deserved, right? But hangs him on stage. And it's unbelievable. There's a galley, and they put him on it. They put the noose, and then they open the floor, and what happens is, it's also perfectly directed that the whole place goes dark with this piercing spotlight on his face. And then the whole place goes dark again. The place turns absolutely light, and Alice Cooper is dancing wearing a white tuxedo. And the people are going insane. I mean, this is unbelievable. It has nothing to do with music, but this is unbelievable, right? Now, what was that all about? Why did I go to these concerts? Not because I like watermelon on my face. Because when that concert's over and you walk outside, you see birds like you've never seen them before. You are just so thankful that you got out of there. All of a sudden, because of the extraordinary, because of the bizarre, all of a sudden, the ordinary becomes so real, becomes so awesome. I remember walking out of this stadium, and I looked at a bird like I never saw it before. It was like, oh, wow. See, that's what sensationalism is. It's shock treatment. It's shock treatment. It's like a person throwing a rock into a well to see, is there water in there? People subject themselves to all kinds of sensationalistic sports, sensationalistic film. You know, now it's not enough to see some of the horror films of people killing each other. Now they actually have real life footage of murders. Right? It's illegal. But people pay a couple $100 to see a live video of a rape, a real rape, of a real murder. You say, what's wrong with people? Why do they do this? Because they want to, in some way, encounter realness. That's what they think they're encountering. Because they're trying to shock themselves. They're trying to blow themselves out of the water. They're trying to see something so extraordinary, so bizarre. And it's sick. Because it's like a drug. You have to keep increasing it for it to give you the same sensation you were looking for. But why not just hold an apple and make a bracha? That's sensational. And get in touch with the realness. I mean, this apple is real. Where did it come from? But you know, that sensitivity to realness. This is not a film. This is not a theater. This is real. You know, there was a Hasidic Rebbe who didn't want to wear glasses because he didn't want his eyes to be in any way obstructed from seeing the world. That doesn't make sense. Glasses, what are you talking about? But you see, our eyes are not only receptive. Our eyes reach out and touch. You know that because I'm sure you've been on the bus and you felt somebody looking at you. And you turn around, and right away that person turns around. How did you feel them looking at you? Because we can touch with our eyes. So lenses. We can see qualities, but Tiferet is more than a quality. It's more than getting a sense of presence. It's having an encounter with essence. And this is really what Moses achieved. All the other prophets, before they could get a glimpse of realness, it would still have to be through all the other qualities. And they get a glimpse of realness, a glimpse of Hashem, the ultimate, peering through the garments. And when you hug your friend, your immediate contact is with their clothing. But there's an encounter between essence with essence, right? Well, so you embrace nature. You give history a big hug. And you feel the king within it all and beyond it all. But then there's another level which is much deeper, right? Where the king strips. And one can have that kind of direct encounter. I want you to know that this kind of metaphor is actually found in the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs, which was written by King Solomon, is considered to be the holy of holies of Judaism. And if you read it, it is so sensual. It seems to be simply a love poem between a lover and his beloved. And it's very sensual. And it's hard to believe when you read it that this is actually a metaphor for our relationship to God. And in Shir HaShirim, God, so to speak, says, Pashatati et ktontai. I have stripped myself of my garments. How can I get dressed again? You're turning your back on me. You're treating me like a stranger. You're looking at me without the eyes of realness, without the eyes of connection, without the eyes of intimacy. I've stripped. And how is it that I can put my clothing back on and throw you out? This is an encounter that Judaism claims we can have. It's the encounter of you. Everything else I can tell you about. I can talk to you about the name Master. I can talk to you about organization and the quality of order in the universe. I can talk to you about how we're all part of the legions and that part of the choreography. I can talk about grandeur. I can talk about mystery. I can talk about power. But I cannot talk about Hashem as you. I can only talk to Hashem as you. And so to each and every one of us. And that is a very powerful place. A person is willing to turn to reality and say, you. Baruch Ata. Blessed. You're the source of blessing. You. Baruch Ata. Blessed be you, Master. I want to meet you. I want that realness. You know, in a strange way, I was once at the Kotel and it was a group of Jews for Jesus. And they were singing hymns and they were getting a number of people very annoyed. I went to speak to them. And I said to them, how do you know Jesus is real? And they said, ask him. Say, Jesus, are you real? Now I said to them, I'm not willing to do that. First, give me a good reason why I should do that. And then I'll be willing to do that. But it's not as if what they said doesn't have some sense to it. The only way you can know me. You could never know me by listening to me. You'll never know me by watching me. You'll never know me by understanding my lectures. You'll only know me when you talk to me. And so too, you'll only know Hashem when you talk to Hashem and say, you. That encounter with realness, qualities we can talk about, the encounter with realness, nobody can give it to you. Nobody can talk about it. Nobody can philosophize about it. Only if a person's willing to say, you. And so, that's what Tiferet is. In a certain way, Tiferet should be dealt with last. Because as we mentioned, all the other qualities are garments. They're qualities. All the other names are titles. But the name, the Yud, the Hey, the Vav, the Hey, is not a title. It's almost as if the personal name that connects that realness. And we are told that we're not allowed to pronounce that name because we're really not ready for that. We're really not ready for that kind of relationship. Moses was. Judaism says no one else at this point in this world are ready for it. We are told in the next world, we will be able to not only see that name, but we will be able to pronounce that name. Because in the next world, from the perspective of the next world, the glasses we will be given will be the glasses which will enable us to have that face-to-face encounter. So that's the attribute of Tiferet.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.